Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 785, December the 22nd, 1986. I sort of rushed through a quick holiday greetings on the last broadcast. I do want to say have a good holiday and a very, very happy new year. My radio listeners, my World Watchers, are really just as close as my family. Some of them I've learned to like very, very much and become good friends with. I wish I had time to spend with more of you, and I appreciate your consistency and your friendship, the books you send, the articles, and the contacts. It helps a lot to exchange information, and some of you are just super at the job of clipping and passing on information. And even if you don't do it, I still appreciate your long listening or your new listeners, my new listeners who have come on so enthusiastically and learned to take the pace of this show. It's pretty fast, this broadcast, and stayed with it. As far as Ronald Reagan goes and the scandals that have been going on for the past 2 months, they fight over or discuss what to title this event. I call it Reagangate. That covers it all because it all emanates from the White House, and so therefore it should be right there, just as Watergate began at the Watergate Hotel. This is Reagangate. This is his baby. This is what he always wanted when he became president, to have his own private army, his little Rambo group of people that could go around the world and knock out all the commies, and he would sit out at Camp David on the weekends and see old-fashioned movies. Don't write him off too quickly, even though he has surgery and he's getting old and his memory is fading and so forth. He's a cornered man, and a cornered man can be very dangerous. And he can escalate his powers even to a position where he stays in the third term. The danger of Ronald Reagan is that he is always identified with Franklin Roosevelt. While he wanted to turn all of Roosevelt's programs back to where they were when he first became president, continuing the old Herbert Hoover tradition, he identified with his stamina and having a third term, even in a wheelchair and being sick, and he quotes Roosevelt all of the time and has this visual image of Roosevelt. So he could easily present the situation whereby he couldn't afford to leave because of events in the world taking place that he might have instigated in the first place, just as Adolf Hitler did in Poland with the agent provocateurs. George Shultz in 1984 was angry that the administration was hamstrung by the Congress. He said they didn't give the president enough War Powers Acts. There were articles, Shultz lambasted the War Powers Act as too restrictive, and he cited the example in Lebanon where the U.S. policy was hamstrung because we couldn't send in U.S. troops. Well, that was 1984. Now we find out in 1986 that the president knew that Iran was behind the bombings of the Marines and the embassy in Lebanon, and also that we were sending arms to Iran, and Israel was sending arms to Iran at the same time that this was taking place. Shultz wants the War Powers Act. In other words, we arm Gaddafi, arm Iran, and then we have an excuse for Reagan's biblical Armageddon by sending the troops in and getting them firmly established into the Middle East so that we can be close to Iran. That is, as you've heard 3,000 times now, geographically important enough to start World War III. They've said that many times during these various interviews and explanations for the behavior because of the border next to Russia and the access to the Baltic Sea. Now, just in the past few weeks, keeping that in mind, just 2 days ago, Ronald Reagan said that he wanted MX missiles on trains on a regular railway system, and they would cost $65 billion. He wants 50 more MX missiles. We don't have enough yet, and on the one hand, he talks about reducing them, and he's requested approximately $65 billion. That's for 50 MX missiles. And the reason now, he says, is to send a message to Moscow. He also announced this past Sunday something which is no surprise to World Watcher listeners or readers of the books that I suggest, such as Project Paperclip, that he wants to turn the space station for Star Wars and military into the Defense Department. And he said this might upset Japan, Europe, or Canada, but the Defense Department wants to take over the entire space program. And, of course, this has to do with Daniel Graham and Edward Teller and Project Paperclip and the very people that are involved in the National Security Council with the Iran and Contragate agents that are skirting around the country in the Middle East and in Central America and in Zaire and Congo and Brunei and Philippines, and you know where else. There's about 27 countries involved now. General Brent Scowcroft was assigned by Ronald Reagan to investigate the National Security Council and what were the problems there that's giving him so much trouble, the scandals. Scowcroft is vice president of Kissinger Associates. I'll do more on that and about him in a moment. But this past year, he was suggested that we can't eliminate ballistic missiles. They're important. He is one of those pushing now for the $65 billion. In other words, what the NSC did illegally or pushed for the wrong reasons, they are incorporating the very people that want the missile systems and new money to make and deploy. Scowcroft is working in the NSC now with John Tower. Ronald Reagan continues the nuclear testing, even though we've tested enough atomic bombs to blow the world over about 100 or 1,000 times, and therefore the Soviet Union is going to start testing again, and he has thrown out the SALT II agreement. Well, it was never signed, and there are over 60 congressmen trying to stop him, and I think they'll realize that he is a military madman. So while it appears that Washington is so bogged down or tied up or the White House can't function, his military mind is functioning very well, and that is a real danger to us, what he would do if he were really cornered. Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North was crying at press conferences. One quotation, the Boston Globe that was picked up, it said, North feels abandoned by former friends and so-called friends and colleagues. He feels a growing disenchantment and anger at the way the White House is treating him. He doesn't mind the $5 million or more book arrangement they set up for him in California. Jeff Bridges may play the role of Ollie North. Money isn't everything, particularly if you have to go to jail for a week or two or 6 years like G. Gordon Liddy. And he's not going to jail. He's going to be pardoned. But he's crying about being abandoned. And the other partner of this team, the second wimp in this whole affair, is Nancy Reagan, who says her husband feels deceived. He was misled by former aides. He's frustrated because, quotes, nobody is happy and jubilant about being deceived. Now, Ronald Reagan has never been deceived. He's the great manipulator, not only of the news, but the policies and the laws and the powers that be. He's worked with the inner team since the days when he was in Hollywood, going way back to the late 40s. And Ollie North has played a role that he was trained to do, and now they're publicly crying as if they are so hurt. They're not national heroes. They might have thought they would be, and they'll be well paid. And I'm sure, like Klaus von Bülow and G. Gordon Liddy later, they'll feel very well paid off and more secure in their position. But right now, Nancy and Ollie are doing a lot of crying. Now, keep in mind that this huge scandal keeps growing. The special prosecutor has decided that instead of having 20 investigators, they needed 60. And instead of it lasting 1 month, it's going to last 1 year. And Senator Inouye says there are very serious charges. So the problem isn't going away. The president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, or should be, knows absolutely nothing about what's happening. Donald Reagan, his chief of staff, former head of Merrill Lynch, a large Wall Street brokerage firm that still exists, where Larry Speaks will soon be earning $250,000 a year. The White House press secretary, he doesn't know anything that's going on. He testified, didn't have to take the fifth, because as former Secretary of the Treasury, as a member of the National Security Council, he doesn't know a thing that's going on, hasn't seen or heard a thing. CIA Director William Casey didn't know anything. His mind was refreshed. And as his recollection was about to come back and he was going to testify the next day, just last Monday, his little arms and legs started shaking in the CIA building and he was put in an ambulance where he had brain surgery the next day. George Shultz, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, Caspar Weinberger, the Secretary of Defense, high executives of the huge multi-billion-dollar Bechtel Corporation, running this government from the standpoint of meeting other countries and militarily speaking, control of NATO and so forth, they know absolutely nothing. The only ones who must be knowing something are the witnesses who are literally dying like flies all over the globe and have been killed in connection to these teams for the past 1 or 2 years. Last week I started some of the deaths and I'm going to continue them next week. I'm going to take 1 week off and just get back to cataloging some of this material for an overview for you over Christmas and New Year's. The Reagan-Gate story has been developing for 2 months. I'm constantly readjusting my files, and as I said once before in the year, a subscriber in the Los Angeles area wrote to me and asked, how do you go about putting material together on these particularly large stories? And they begin with one small aspect and they grow and grow. So just to give you an interview, give you an idea of how I'm arranging the cataloging of the material and the range that it covers, I'm going to share that with you this evening, maybe continue it next week to finish off the air, because the files keep growing, but just this is about a quarter of what I have, but all that I can put on the air in 1 hour. Now, when I refer to books, I told you I use these large art books. They're different colors, like 48 different pages, and I put on the cover of them A to Z and subjects that go into those books. They have a pretty good binding, strangely enough, and I have broken down this material so far into 6 of those books with 48 different sections. And to have a section doesn't mean one article. It can be a lot of articles, but a certain section of this Reagan Gates story goes in one book or in another, and I'll share them with you and just describe to you what are in the first two books so you can get an idea of the range of the story. Now, in a case like this or in all of these matters, there are the planners and the winners. Somebody wins, and you always look for who is the winner and who would gain from this. And so far, the two that stay aside that are public prominent that are displayed as the epitome of statesmanship are Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig, of course. They're on television, talk shows, dressed up in tuxedos, going to banquets, making all kinds of innuendos. Henry Kissinger had a column this week, nobody standing by the president, and he's just sitting there grinning from ear to ear, waiting for next year for the Constitution to change, whereby he can become president. Don't take that hail to the chief lightly that they play at the Bohemian Grove when he goes there in the summers. And the planners and the winners are the ones I look at first. So in book one, which I call the Major Conspiracy Connections, because I believe that this is a possible agent provocateur situation set up through Mr. Hasenfass and the newspaper in Lebanon to remove President Reagan and Vice President George Bush and make the way for these two pillars of government, these heads of states, these majestic figures such as Haig. Now, when Richard Nixon was in the White House, Alexander Haig called down to Australia to Mr. Alex Butterfield of the Air Force, come to Washington and start taping the conversations in the White House. That was about the way the dialogue went. We come to Washington, I need you. And Butterfield went up to Washington and was in charge of the White House tapes for the not the Defense Department, but that little pocket under Haig and the White House. And that brought the president out, and it brought in Haig as chief of staff. And Henry Kissinger sat with the mumbling Nixon, who was going crazy, in the Lincoln Room talking to himself, and Henry Kissinger looked great on top. Now, above all this, if we have that triangle again, is that Gustav Anton Fritz Kramer, former plans officer for the Pentagon. His office is over Mr. Westmoreland in Vietnam, Southeast Asia, and most of the people involved in the Contragate story, both in Iran and Central America, worked under Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger in Laos and were part of the Pentagon entourage that were formed right before Kennedy was killed at the time of the invasion of Cuba, the Bay of Pigs, then into the Kennedy assassination and then Southeast Asia. And they all converge again in the National Security Council, the Defense Department, the CIA, in Iran and in Central America. I would say that Kramer is the highest on this team. And next to him, sharing offices with him, as I mentioned before, is Daniel Graham. So in book one, I have a section on Kramer and where he connects to any of these particular people in the news. Under him, Daniel Graham, former head of the DIA, and his offices with Kramer. And under that, Fred Eclay, and where every time there's a mention of Fred Eclay, whether he worked with Zbigniew Brzezinski in National Security Council or Mr. Carlucci, the new head of the NSC, I put Carlucci and Eclay into that section, and every article pertaining to Eclay and the safe house in London that these people use, the Mossad, the Saudi Arabians, for arms to Iran, I put under his name. And then a section of Henry Kissinger and his relationship to these particular people, too. The National Security Agency, the way he set it up, the references to him in editorials or articles, and how he was behind instigating the secret team for the machinations that they're doing now. Alexander Haig and his specific relationship to arms to Iran going on from 1980, the late 1980 and 81 until Reagan was reelected in 1984, and his relationship to Michael Ledeen and George Bush with the arms and military, Alexander Haig. And then a section in this book, this is section 6 or page 6, I have tabs that number them, the articles about the coups of the colonels, how the colonels take over the White House. I've had some of them on the air. The next section is on the National Security Council as it was structured in 1947. I've shared some of that with you. The next is the National Security Council, the rat holes in the wall, the hidden access, the programs not viewed by the government outside of the Defense Department, the CIA, and the State Department running on their own, their secret group. And then beyond that is another section on the supersedes me that is behind even the National Security Council. So the one that is set up for its special operations of the 40 Committee and so forth, there's a group even smaller than that of 3 men here and 3 from the defense and how they connect to Iran and Central America and other operations around the world where we have the freedom fighters, whether it's Angola, Afghanistan, and so forth. Then the investigation of the National Security Council, I have one section on that, and then broken down into 3 parts. General Brent Scowcroft, John Tower, and Ed Muskie. Scowcroft was vice president, is vice president of Kissinger Associates. On the board of that group is William Rogers, who investigated the Challenger, who's involved with William Casey. He's Casey's law partner in all kinds of financial entanglements with Jay Dominelli's suit in San Diego, with missing billions down in the Philippines, with Marcos offshore investments from New York. Robert O. Anderson of Richfield, and I mentioned him because he's just one member of a board of a team that's funding the Contras or covert action that are put together by the Defense Department that but look like civilian groups. So Rogers and Anderson are part of other operations and work with Kissinger and Scowcroft. Then John Tower and his relationship to Marina Oswald and his homosexual scandals that were written in a book I referred to earlier with Secretary of State John Lehman and Henry Kissinger, and Ed Muskie, the third wimp on that panel, still suffering from the Watergate LSD. Poor guy's either got Parkinson's or a hangover from the Watergate era. And they are investigating the National Security Council. And then that section on the supersedes, which I've had on the air and shared with you, set up by Henry Kissinger and tied into the international fascista with Klaus Barbie and Licio Gelli, who was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, and that makes a full cycle to the cocaine and drug connections later. Then under elections, this is in book one, the section on elections, and I have 6, and I'm adding a few more sections on that. One has to do with the hostage crisis in 1980, 1979 and 80, and the payoff of arms to Iran for holding up the hostages until Reagan was elected versus Jimmy Carter. The other is the use of Israel and arms to Iran by way of Alexander Haig from 1981 to 84 for the same purposes. The other is the Cartergate papers, the stolen papers with CIA Deputy Max Ugel, close friend of William Casey, Edwin Meese, all to assure the Reagan election in 1980, and there are 1,000 pages of government hearings, 2 books on that that I have, and I'm photocopying areas to show how the Cartergate affected the elections and why those stolen papers were needed by Ronald Reagan. Then the hostage crisis in 1985-86 and the frantic search to get them home so that the Senate would have a preponderance of Republicans, which Ronald Reagan wanted, and governors, which he got. Then the Michael Ledeen connections to Billy Gates in 1980, trying to discredit Jimmy Carter and setting him up through Italy, through the P2 and Henry Kissinger, those operations, and also the use of Western goals and the computerized lists for people who are against the Contras funding or against Star Wars, and the use of John Singlaub, Edward Teller, Admiral Moore, Eugene Wigner, Hans Stenholz. I've mentioned them over and over before. But under elections, the use of these organizations or these situations that tie in to the above, such as the planners like Kramer, Graham, Ickley, Kissinger, and Haig, all these relate back to them, and they have to do with altering our elections. The next file section in this book, instead of putting them in separate files, I lay the articles flat and turn the pages, as I say, and have identification so I can refer and see the articles instead of pulling out files all day. They're all in one book. One book can have 48 sections. It gets pretty heavy, but I do at least up to 30 sections. A section on all the articles about Haig in 1980, Arms-Duran, and United Technology up to 1986, because Haig was president of United Technology, so what began as an electoral victory in 1980 was continuing by way of their Canadian franchise instead of out of Connecticut in 1986 for the same purposes that Reagan needed at this time. Then Fred Eakley, the very important man from the Defense Department, I keep one section on winners or losers in his relationship to Mr. Vershinsky and Jimmy Carter and the Defense Department and the CIA and his plans to destabilize Poland and Solidarity. Then under Eakley, I have the other articles about the links of Michael Ledeen to discredit Poland and the KGB and the Bulgarian connections, and bringing in the fact that Aja was going to shoot Lech Walesa, and the disinformation and counterintelligence that had to do with Poland. And Eakley ties up to the front groups in London that later, his connections to the late Hashemi or Adnan Khashoggi. He ties into the Defense Department plans that I've had on the air for you of a meeting in 1983-84, whereby private organizations would branch out and appear to be civilian organizations. So I have Eakley under two separate groups. Then a section on group and front organizations. Well, that alone has 30 files, and they're very full, and they are what they're referred to as humanitarian or religious fronts. I listed 12 of them on broadcast 783, December the 8th, but there are 30 or more. I have 30 front organizations that are all interconnected. The boards are interconnected, and the important thing about them is they reach up to Lieutenant Colonel North and Fred Eakley and the Defense Department and the White House. And they appear, as I say, to be charity organizations, but they're busy all over the world, whether it's to overthrow Ghana. They had their finger in that, and some men were arrested. When this story broke, the four men were allowed to leave the jail in Brazil. I'll update more on that later. They are getting ready to overthrow Suriname now, and these teams meet and send in Christian aid, medical aid, and so forth that are connected directly to our Defense Department. Then there's the Henry Kissinger protégés. I have Kissinger above waiting there to be president, but his protégés in the Reagan gate are such people like Robert McFarland, Secretary of the Navy, John Layman, and Layman connects to other corporations like Northrop. I'll bring that up in a minute. It has its own file. But Michael Ledeen and Ledeen's links with McFarland in Iran, because I believe that their visit there was set up as agent provocateurs, and I'll develop more of that for you, the purpose being that Mr. Haig and Mr. Kissinger come out squeaky clean. We keep hearing references that Ronald Reagan wanted to be like Henry Kissinger by opening up Iran as Kissinger opened up China. The point is that you could send someone to speak with Khomeini, you could speak in Iran, but what they're trying to do is get rid of Khomeini and put in the Savak and the repressive government that the people revolted against before that would never work, and also they were shipping billions of dollars of arms. We didn't ship arms to China before we talked. We talked and then ship arms. And then a separate folder section on Michael Ledeen. His location at the Center for Strategic International Studies, his work with the Defense Department, going into the Defense Department for weapons, his being the architect of the KGB Bulgarian Pope plot. Ledeen goes in with this category of the very highest movers and shakers. Ledeen was on Nightline last week like an elder statesman with various persons discussing problems that are taking place. Not as a man who was told never to be allowed in Italy, not as a man with Francesca Pazienza, with ties to Licio Gelli of the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo. No blushing about this Jew working with the international Odessa, the Nazis, the drug dealers. He's on there as if he were a statesman, and you might have seen it. I've been videotaping TV night and day as much as I can on these programs to get these faces. Another section I have in Book 1 is on Richard Pearl. Very important from the Defense Department, and his links with John Layman, Edward Teller, Noel Koch from the Defense Department, and Michael Armacost from the Defense Department. They worked in the National Security Council with the colonels. They set up the safe house in London for Mr. Khashoggi, Mr. Hashemi, And they work with Saudi Arabia, with the Israeli Mossad, and the United States. They're really a triangle. If you think that Israel and Saudi Arabia are enemies, make another guess. They're very close. And Pearl, Lehman, Teller, Koch, and Armacost set up the nucleus of these arrangements between Israel and Saudi Arabia. I don't expect you to remember all these names or connections. I'm just telling you the sections that I have and that I'm taking material from the daily news that is coming as the stories break and putting it into these sections and then adding to that section the stuff that I had on these people already where they were working together and what they were doing. The next section is on the Bruni connections. I've had that on the air with you, with George Shultz and Bechtel Corporation and Defense Department, Elliot Abrams, who's in charge of Central America, and funds for the Contras or millions for anything else the Defense Department wants. And in return, we let Brunei become one of the world's worst dictatorships, a total monopoly of one person against all the people, controlling all the oil and gas and the resources of Brunei. Then there's the Philippine connections that, again, go into William Casey and Wim Rogers, his law partner. It has to do with General Fabian Vare. There's a subpoena for him in relation to sending arms to Iran. And Ferdinand and Imelda Marcos, of course, are tied into that. This has to do with Philippine drugs and money, the flow of money into America and Swiss banks, and again being used for the Iranian armaments by our Defense Department National Security. And, of course, the two big actors in that scene are Paul Laxalt and Senator Lugar from Indiana, who are very close to William Casey and keep a hold on Corazon Aquino. And, of course, over there just not two weeks ago, I guess it must be three by now, was John Singlaub and Thomas Kleins, our two super agents of the secret team, who could, in fact, be arranging for the murder of Corazon Aquino. This is what they're used for and what they do the best, and they come right out of the national security again with the president and Oliver North and George Bush. Another section I have in book one, you see, is getting very full. Soon I'll take it out of the pages and make file folders of these subjects. But while I'm working with them and the news is breaking fast, I keep them in these books, then take hunks out, put them in a folder. It's easier to separate them in the news as the news comes. The next section is on Frank Carlucci, the gentleman who's been appointed to become the new director of the National Security Council. Everybody loves him. George Shultz, Secretary of State, and Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of Defense. He comes from that early team of Kissinger and Kramer and Daniel Graham of the Defense Department and the Pentagon and the Central Intelligence Agency. And he helped administer at least five military dictatorships and coups that I'll go into with you. The background on Carlucci and the articles coming about him, plus the things that I had, I put in a section called Carlucci NSC. And he assisted Fred Eakley, again, Eakley, the partner of Graham and Fritz Kramer. Fred Eakley was his assistant. He worked, Carlucci worked with him to destabilize Poland and put in Solidarity as a thorn in the side of the Soviet control over Poland, just as we are arming and sending guns to people in Iran to overthrow Khomeini. Eakley used Frank Carlucci together in the Pentagon and in the CIA, and he was deputy CIA director under Jimmy Carter's Jonestown when 1,912 people were dead, and that was the time when Brzezinski was part of the Jonestown scandal covering it up, and persons in the Carter administration were very much behind the mind-controlled experimentations and what was going down in Jonestown at the time. The next section is on Admiral John Poindexter. He's very much a part of this inner team and probably has been for a long time. To his credit, he takes masterminding the Libyan raid, the Libyan disinformation. He oversaw the Iranian arms deals. He planned the grenade invasion from 1983. And he has a history bragging about lying to the American people. And, of course, he kept the press out of Grenada when that hospital was bombed. And I compared it to Jonestown and Jimmy Carter and the same persons, Peter Byrne, Dr. Peter Byrne, the medical school in Grenada, and the relationship to Guyana. And the cast here from Grenada and Guyana overlaps identically. And I suggest that you go back and listen to the tapes I did on those programs. I was ready to write articles on Grenada. I really should put them together. But Carlucci is part of that whole milieu of Poland, of Michael Ledeen, and discrediting the Polish and the Bulgarian and the KGBs. And these people have worked as a team for a long time. So it's just natural that he would be appointed as new National Security Advisor. Then the Canadian connections are ready to go out of a book and into their own files. They're so huge. They involve William Casey and Roy Furmark. I barely got into it last week. Now, this past couple of days, there's mention of John Gamble, G-A-M-B-L-E, from Canada, as a member of the World Anti-Communist League and attending the meetings down in Dallas last year. And the Canadian connections involve Adnan Khashoggi, who isn't as rich as people think. He's made a lot of bets and done a lot of gambling, and he owes Mr. Furmark approximately $21 million. They made loans to him. So when Khashoggi is put against the wall, he'll put out stories for blackmail, and it was this threat of blackmail that got William Casey off his butt and began to break these stories because the connections were coming in over his head that had to do with large amounts of missing money and loans and arms to Iran. There are no nice guys in this story, and these connections of blackmail and gambling debts and arms dealing debts involving Saudi Arabia, the United States, White House, and so forth get more interesting as the story goes on and linked to John St. Laub and the World Anti-Communist League. We'll take a 1 minute break now and then come on to book two. That's just book one. As I say, they'll go into file folders probably this next week. I'm going to share with you book two, the kinds of connections that are developing along other lines.